Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Magic Ops by T.R. Cameron, Martha Carr, and Michael Enderley. Narrated by Tracy Odom. Chapter 1. FBI agent Diana Sheen ducked under the yellow tape that secured the perimeter of the incident scene. A bounce in her step betrayed her excitement for what lay ahead. "One thing I can always count on is that the job is never the same 2 days in a row." She caught her share of strange cases in the past, but this promised to be something special. Magic is the ultimate wild card. When a blue-clad patrol officer maintaining the outer perimeter moved toward her, she held up her ID and kept walking. She was often mistaken for a civilian. Her youthful looks and only slightly below-average height caused others to chronically underestimate her. The leather jacket and boots she wore instead of the customary uniform might have contributed to the problem. She would acknowledge this to herself on a regular basis, but would usually shrug it off. "Hey, I've got to be me." Diana's target was about 30 feet ahead and near a V formed by two police cars. A gaggle of concerned people in suits peered at what looked like large sheets of paper spread out on the car hoods. Bystanders asked questions, and uniformed officers yelled answers in the crisp autumn breeze. Unfortunately, said breeze wouldn't stop blowing her long black hair into her face. She'd been a mile away, finishing up a guest speaking session with the local university's intelligence and security program when the call came in. The darkly gorgeous Gothic structure that loomed ahead was illuminated by replicas of 19th-century oil lamps that dotted its facade. A trip to the Antiquities Museum had been in her plans for months, but this wasn't quite how she'd pictured it. An afternoon outing, maybe a nice dinner after with someone interesting, but definitely not this. Diana veered over the grass to intercept a tall man in an off-the-rack suit. The twilight was still bright enough to show the wrinkles in its unremarkable gray fabric. His tie was purple and his shirt crisp and white. His whole ensemble screamed official. So, naturally, she greeted him with a grin and a raised fist. "Rodriguez, fancy meeting you here." He returned the smile and bumped her fist familiarly as he fell in beside her.
"Sheen, what are the odds?"
"I was at the U."
"You?" "Physical therapy at the University Med Center."
He gestured vaguely over his shoulder toward the tall institutional office building that marked a corner of the campus. The life of a Washington, D.C. FBI agent was full of potential for injury. She grimaced and couldn't remember a single time when the whole office was simultaneously healthy.
"Do you know anything more?"
Rodriguez shook his head and his almost regulation-length brown hair flopped to the side.
"Only what they said over the radio. Hostage situation, vicinity response, special circumstances."
She nodded. They both knew the code for magic. The two continued their trek toward the command post. They stopped and stared a woman down across a car hood. Her sharp suit and prominent gold rank badge confirmed that she outranked the other field officers. Diana tried to avoid inhaling the acrid fumes from the running motors as the agents reported in and asked the officer's name.
"Thompson,"
came the brusque reply. The woman's voice was husky and reminded Diana of Kathleen Turner in Body Heat.
"A professor and his class were inside examining the museum's special collection. At least two suspects entered, ejected the security guards, and locked the building down."
"Any demands?" Diana's flat tone betrayed none of the excitement her body had betrayed mere minutes before.
"None. Only crazy talk about how we've stolen things that don't belong to us, how they'll take them back, and how they'll kill the class if we mess with him."
She frowned. "We? Who is we?"
"I have no idea. Like I said, crazy."
She twirled a finger next to her ear and exhaled a foggy breath into the chill of the October evening. Rodriguez bent to examine the papers that splayed across the hood and finally recognized them as blueprints.
"Are there any other people in the museum?"
The husky voice carried a note of tiredness.
"No. It was closed due to the class's reservation. Only guards and custodial staff were on duty. The professor teaches here every Monday."
Diana put her hands on her hips and frowned. "It's unlikely to be a coincidence, then." Thompson's ponytail bobbed as she nodded.
I thought so, too.
HRT? Rodriguez asked.
His finger pressed firmly on the front door access point on the blueprint while he fluttered his other hand over the rest of the schematics, as though he could convince a better entry to materialize out of thin air. The officer grunted.
More than 30 minutes away. Apparently, the backup team is training out of town, and the primary was called to an incident on the other side of the city.
She raised dark eyes to look at Diana.
Before you say it, no, that doesn't sound like a coincidence either.
The agent dropped her hands to the car hood with a muted thump and bent to peer at the paper. SWAT?
Wouldn't you know it? 2 separate calls. Our people at one, yours at the other.
Diana shook her head.
This is bad.
She wasn't sure if the comment originated from the situation, the access points, or both.
It's all bad.
Rodriguez's voice matched her pre-action excitement as he pointed at the blueprint.
The back door looks like the best way in. You said there are 2 of them, so if they're smart, they'll have eyes on it.
I said at least 2.
Thompson corrected him.
There could be more.
Diana had heard enough. Can we borrow windbreakers? The woman nodded, and a young patrol officer at her side darted away. He returned shortly with a pair of black coats with police written in large white letters on the back. An older man followed purposefully, his hands in his pockets. Thompson looked inquiringly at the officer.
This gentleman wanted a word. He says he works inside, he explained as he handed the jackets to the agents.
All the superior officers turned their gazes on the man. Diana slipped out of her leather jacket, set it carefully inside the patrol car through the open window, and pulled on the windbreaker. Rodriguez did the same. Since neither agent seemed in a hurry to speak, Thompson took the initiative.
What do you know, mister?
His gruff voice matched his pocked complexion and stubbly face.
Beale. Stan Beale. I figured you might need to get inside and thought I should tell you about the tunnel.
The agent spoke as one. Tunnel?
This thing is ridiculous.
Rodriguez held the ancient ring up. It was easily as big as his palm and supported a cornucopia of metal keys that could have served as props in a gothic vampire film. His hands were barely large enough to hold the ring, his flashlight, and his pistol. Diana's smaller hands only had to deal with her light and weapon, respectively. Tough break, Rodriguez, she sassed. He rolled his eyes.
Come on, let's keep going.
The brick tunnel was inky black, and the mini maglights they carried sufficed to prevent tripping, but didn't offer much in the way of distant vision. The structure was probably 12 feet wide and a similar height, a throwback to a time when exhibits and artifacts traveled through the passage on the way to the museum to avoid potential theft. Now, the maintenance crew used it to stay out of the weather when they crossed from the museum's warehouse to the main building. It bore a variety of earthy smells, ranging from the dank of mold to the moist tang of clay and the less pleasant scent of rotting vegetation. All these mingled with the faint chemical odor of cleaning solutions. They'd passed through 2 of the tunnel's 3 doors. If the staff member was to be believed, the final door separating them from the museum basement lay somewhere ahead. The blueprints had marked the door sealed, but Beale laughed when he informed them that part of the job had never been completed.
Money troubles like everywhere else.
Given the man's low status on the totem pole as a staff member, Diana couldn't blame him for the amusement.
Being ticked at your employer is normal. Still, it's worth remembering the attitude.
Rodriguez grunted to break the silence of their trek. A veritable beast grunted back as the echoes returned.
This tunnel is a lucky break.
Do you think it might not be?
They knew the museum was closed and probably about the class. Why go through all the drama if they could have simply waited down here and stolen in during the night?
Diana kept her voice soft and calm. They can't know everything. If they planned the robbery with the public schematics, they probably thought the tunnel wouldn't work the same way we did. She pointed at the door ahead, then set her back against the wall outside the door's arc. The position afforded her a perfect line of sight on anything it revealed when it opened.
There's cautious, and there's simply paranoid.
Rodriguez holstered his gun at the small of his back to free his hands for the mammoth key. He slipped it into the lock, grabbed the door handle, and nodded at Diana. She tensed her finger to depress the trigger safety on her Glock 19M and whispered, 3, 2, 1. Rodriguez twisted the key and wrenched the door open. She traversed her light and pistol in a Z pattern, but encountered only crates and boxes. Most were neatly stacked to each side. Rodriguez drew his gun with a faint rustle and lowered the giant key ring onto a crate with a muted clank. They advanced, covering one another, and cleared the room. The blueprints claimed the room's other exit fronted a stairwell that rose to the main floor of the museum. Beale had given Rodriguez a much more reasonable key ring for the museum's doors, but the knob turned freely in her hand. The door opened on oiled hinges to reveal the promised stairs. The other agent could have been ordering lunch for all the concern he showed.
What's the plan?
Diana smiled.
Same as always. Go in and talk them down. If they won't be talked down, try to shoot them in the leg.
He chuckled.
What if they're wizards or something?
She leaned into the doorway to peer up the staircase. Even better. Then we get to punch them in the mouth before or after we shoot them in the leg so they can't do magic.
Rodriguez's shoulders shook with suppressed mirth. Shoot them in the leg had been a running joke since the academy. As a rule, they'd been trained never to aim anywhere other than center mass. Once he regained control of himself, he gestured for her to take point.
They crept up the stairs and emerged into a three-way intersection. A loud voice ranted nearby and filled the corridor ahead of them with echoes. Diana checked the crude map she'd drawn on the back of her hand.
It sounds like it's coming from the main exhibit hall. Go straight, then take a left.
They stowed their lights. There was no need for them when the hallways were illuminated. When they reached the corner, a brighter patch of light stretched along the tiles to suggest the presence of a well-lit room beyond. The insistent tone sounded male, but was strangely high-pitched, more like an adolescent. Diana put her back against the wall and risked a quick look. Frightened students faced the rear of the building from where they sat in a line with black rope bound around their wrists. She held her left hand to the side of her mouth and whispered as she turned to face her partner.
How many in the class again?
Rodriguez held up 5 fingers, closed his fist, and raised 4 more.
Okay, I saw 5 at the back of the room. The rest must be in front. Hopefully.
She pointed 1 finger at herself, then directed it to the left, and pointed 2 fingers at him and swung them to the right. He nodded, confirming her instructions to veer right when they entered.
Let's listen in, she mouthed.
Again, he nodded. It wasn't that hard to focus on the ranting. Most people in charge of a hostage situation felt the need to monologue at one point or another. This perpetrator didn't disappoint, and his voice carried shrilly from the vaulted ceilings and along the tile floors to their ears.
You gather these things as if they belong to you or are objects to be studied, locked away and admired. You are nothing but thieves, stealing that which belongs to the Orisarans.
His voice rose from an accusatory barb to a seething screech.
Worse, you don't have the slightest comprehension what the artifacts are, what their purpose is, or who they are meant for. You appropriate our culture, but do not even so much as appreciate it.
She exchanged a glance with Rodriguez, and his face registered the same bemusement.
What the hell?
Diana shook her head, counted down from 3 on her fingers, and moved. She thrust into the exhibit room at a full run and immediately broke left along the wall. The space was wide and open, which meant she would have to move quickly to avoid any risk that she might be shot herself. Her training kicked in, and her mind categorized the scene in flashes. There were 9 students in total, exactly like Rodriguez had said. All were bound, and 1 slumped forward, bleeding from his forehead. A wooden lectern stood on the opposite side, to which the professor was secured by black rope. The man looked half a decade older than his picture on the university website. An elf lurked in the shadows at the corner of the room nearest to her. This was not the beautiful, glowing, friendly elf of Middle Earth.
Tolkien would spin in his grave if he saw this.
Poorly healed gashes ran down the dark skin on the left side of his face. The right side was a mass of wrinkles and scars that could only have resulted from a terrible fire. He had no hair, and his one unburnt ear tapered to a graceful point. It was possibly the only attractive thing about him. He wore a black cloak or robe of some kind that covered him from the neck down and obscured his limbs. Diana took advantage of the situation to try to intimidate the elf into submission as she leveled her gun. "Down on the floor, sleazebag! Now!" He laughed at her. The bastard actually laughed at her. His voice dripped condescension.
"Aren't you precious? It's about time you got here. We've been waiting."
Everything slipped into slow motion. She felt danger to her right and twisted to face it. Her gun tracked toward the opposite corner. A robed figure emerged from behind the professor and gestured with a hand. Anger shot through her, and she extended her left hand and squeezed it into a fist. The wizard's arms snapped to his sides and effectively wrecked whatever spell he'd attempted to cast. Diana smirked. "You didn't expect power from a precious human, did you, asshole?" The pistol barked twice, and scarlet blossoms appeared on his leg and on one of his locked arms. Time returned to normal as he screamed and fell, dropping the wand he'd held in his other hand. Bound though the professor was, he had the presence of mind to kick the instrument away from the downed wizard. With the first target effectively neutralized, she jerked the gun back to face the scarred elf. She vaguely hoped that Rodriguez had remained vigilant against the possibility of more enemies and thus hadn't seen her perform the magic, but she couldn't risk checking. Thrusting the thought aside, she raised her pistol to eye level, sighted down the barrel, and advanced one slow step at a time toward the dark figure. "Nice try, asshole. But I said get your face down on the floor." Her voice was reasonable, calm, and non-reactive. If you can't avoid the conflict, attempt to defuse it. Annoyance had replaced his condescension.
"No, I shall not. And what will you do now, little Avenger?"
On the one hand, she hated it when people mentioned her height. Yes, at 5'3¾", she was on the short side of normal. That didn't make it right to judge her for it. On the other hand, he had more or less given her superhero status. She smiled. "Okay, let's talk about this." Her gaze remained locked on his, and her arms relaxed slowly. The gun lowered. She fired two rounds at his thigh without even blinking. The perpetrator's robe opened as a scarred left hand extended between the arcs. The bullet slammed into an invisible barrier and clattered to the floor. Diana growled under her breath. "Damn shields." She fired twice more and lurched into a run. She registered gunfire behind her and figured the rest of we had joined the party. Another pair of bullets flew, this time leveled at the elf's chest. Once again, they were easily deflected, but the tactic had worked. Now she was only a handful of feet away. She threw the gun at his head and added a telekinetic burst to hurry it along. He flinched in mid-cast and flicked a hand up to deflect the weapon. It was enough to distract him from the left hook that closed at high speed with the force of her forward jump behind it. His eyes widened as he registered the threat, and his mouth formed a word that he failed to finish before her knuckles smashed it away. Blood flowed as his lips split and he stumbled back. His head struck the wall behind him with a resounding crack. Diana used her forward momentum to launch her right knee into his solar plexus. The elf dropped and gasped raggedly for breath. With the threat effectively neutralized, she turned to survey the room. There were no civilian casualties. A third suspect lay on the ground in front of Rodriguez, bleeding from a hole in his thigh. The sight of her partner in this op reignited her fears. "Please don't have seen my magic." She retrieved a set of zip ties from her back pocket and trussed the elf's hands and feet, then hogtied him for good measure. She knelt and tapped him on his bald dome. "Hey there, dumbass. Just a warning. If I hear anything out of you, I'll assume you're casting and kick you in the head until you're unconscious. Not if you understand." He nodded. There was a shift of energy in the room, and she looked up through the skylight to see twilight transform into night. The broken elf at her feet laughed in a way that sounded both happy and relieved. She thought about it for a second, then reluctantly decided to let him have the moment. I probably can't kick him for laughing. Rodriguez approached and returned her fallen weapon. She popped the magazine and ejected the chambered round in case the pistol's brief life as a missile had damaged it. The grin on his face said it all.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but weren't you supposed to shoot him in the leg?
Diana scowled. I wonder what the penalty is for accidentally shooting a fellow officer in the leg. Chapter 2. The light turned green at the perfect moment, and the tires squealed as Diana flowed from the off-ramp onto Pennsylvania Avenue. The fastback's transmission was as smooth as new ice, and she shifted gears easily. Everything faded away behind the wheel to leave only the currents of the road and the sensation of raw power at her fingertips. Her eyes flicked to the glowing clock, which matched the one in her head. 8:12 p.m., barely enough time to get to her date before the venue closed. She saw a ripple in the traffic ahead, courtesy of a meandering minivan, and switched lanes in a burst of speed. The defensive driving courses she'd taken at the academy had added a layer of polish to her natural ability, and the fastback allowed her to use all of it. Diana pulled into the parking lot 5 minutes later and bounded into the building. The worker at the desk waved her on, and she thrust open the door to the back at an excited jog. She spotted him immediately, and he was as handsome as ever.
Maxie!
The young borzoi barked and gave a doggy bow. His front paws on the ground and his tail circled wildly. His long nose was almost comical in that position. An amused Doug spoke from her left.
I saw you wouldn't make it today.
The man was well past retirement age. He'd worked at the shelter forever and was an absolute treasure, or so the other members of the staff had confided. She answered without so much as turning aside from ruffling the dog's ears through the bars of the gate. It would take a lot to keep me away from visiting my Max. Doug moved into her line of sight and leaned his back against the wall that separated Max's living space from the rest.
You know, we appreciate your sponsorship, but wouldn't it be easier to adopt him?
Diana shot him a grin and finished the ritual they enacted at least once a week during her many visits. He'd be lonely. I'm never home. Here he has you and the other dogs to play with. The man held out the customary leash. Diana unlatched the gate, and Max bounded out, put his paws on her shoulders, and licked her face once. That was their agreement. She couldn't break him of the habit, but it stopped at one. The shelter sat on a commercial block that sometimes attracted folks looking for trouble, but no one ever bothered her when she had Max by her side, or vice versa. They started with a slow jog and sped up with each circuit of the block to take the last in a full run that left both of them panting. She perched on the front steps of the facility, and the dog lay beside her, his chin on her thigh. Soulful eyes gazed up at her with that same question. She sighed. I'd love to take you home, Max, but you'd be alone for most of the day, every day, not counting the out-of-town trips. She rubbed his velvety ears and the smooth fur on his head, then traced her fingers down his nose. This garnered a sigh of pleasure from the canine. It's simply not the right time. He barked at her and wagged his tail, and she felt forgiven. Momentary sadness was replaced with joy, and they went inside for the second part of their playtime, an elaborate game of fetch and wrestle. A half hour later, Max lay resting in his den. With the stress of her day's work partly burned away, Diana waved at the night guard and departed the shelter. The year and a quarter of donations since she'd met Max had earned her a few privileges, one of which was the right to stay past closing time. When she asked why the dog hadn't been adopted after so long, Doug would only shrug and answer that he seemed uninterested when other people greeted him.
The right person will come eventually, he'd say.
Then he would add,
and again, maybe he's already found the perfect one.
Diana sighed as she drove home and wished, as she always did, that her life would allow her to bring Max along. The brownstone had been in her family for 3 generations. When they retired early to Florida, her grandparents had turned it over to her parents and their new baby. Halfway through her childhood, they'd moved to a research facility in Colorado, and the house became a rental. Her parents never returned to it and were comfortable in the Centennial State. But she reclaimed the home when she joined the FBI. Restoring the damages inflicted by time and the occasional out-of-control tenant was a work in progress. Her mother and father had offered to pay, but she preferred doing it herself when time permitted. Unfortunately, that wasn't very often. So far, she'd fixed only the kitchen, her bedroom, and the basement. She had the bathrooms redone by professionals, knowing her own limits. But there was still a long list left to repair. She hung her keys on a hook near the door and threw the deadbolts. A quick code armed the security system again, which assured her that no one had been in her home while she was away. She reached for her gun to stow it in the hidden safe in her hall cupboard, but remembered that she was weaponless until they verified that she hadn't damaged the gun in the fight earlier that evening. Diana sighed. Stupid elf. I should have shot him in the mouth. The wood floors made every sound echo, but the creak that accompanied each step sounded like home. Her next stop was the traditional rotary thermostat, which she spun up a couple of degrees on her way to the basement. Unlike the old-world allure of the rest of the house, the bottom floor was clean and modern. She pulled off her brown shin-high harness boots and set them carefully aside. They weren't her favorites, but definitely fell in the top five. She peeled her shirt off, threw it in the laundry hamper, and followed it with her socks and pants. A pair of lime-green shorts, a remnant of poor sartorial choices in days past, hung on a hook, and she slipped them on. Even the fact that they didn't clash with her black sports bra couldn't save them. There was a reason they lived in her basement, where only those closest to her were ever allowed. She lit a cone of vanilla incense and crossed to the ballet bar attached to one wall to stretch. A well-worn teal yoga mat and mounted television stood on the other side of the room. The screen was large enough to keep her focused when she attended yoga classes via YouTube. The back half of the area was her second favorite spot on Earth after the animal shelter. The Wing Chun dummy she used to preserve muscle memory for blocks and strikes stood in the far right corner. She'd bought it new and looked forward to the day when the wood would show some palpable sign of her labors. After 2 years, all she really managed was to trade a number of bruises for a little polish on the protruding arms. A heavy bag hung from a frame on the other side. Unlike the dummy, this particular fitness device showed damage from countless punches and kicks. Silver duct tape covered the places where she had kicked it in a rage after she'd forgotten to remove her boots first, and thus doomed the bag to rip open. After today's action, though, neither of those could meet her need for release. That required the best training tool in the room. The combat mannequin stood in the center of an open area, which allowed her to attack from any side. It was little more than a human figure posed in a combative stance with its fists raised like a boxer. It had been mounted on a turntable that would randomly reposition it when activated. She started slowly and threw jabs and the occasional reverse punch into its solar plexus. At first, she winced when she felt the fleshy resistance. Once she warmed up, she forgot the pain and added hooks to the head, knees to the midsection, and kicks to the legs. Fully engaged and breathing hard, she tromped on the pedal to activate the turntable and circled to launch kicks and punches at the resistant material of the dummy. After 10 minutes, she added shouts to her hardest blows and practiced spinning moves. She finally gasped 20 minutes later, unable to keep her guard up, and called the exercise done. A brief yoga cool-down completed her workout. Diana left the basement, grabbed a cherry Coke from the fridge, and guzzled half the can. She trudged upstairs on legs of lead and started the shower. A short blast of music sounded as she was about to step in, and she flicked her sweaty hair out of the way to lift the phone to her ear. Her playful growl was all too appropriate for the caller. "What?" Lisa's familiar and equally mischievous voice shouted to be heard over the radio and engine of her car. "I'll be at the Beagle in 45 minutes. You know you don't want to leave me alone in such a dangerous place," her friend teased. She smothered a yawn. "I think you'll be okay this once." Lisa's voice was filled with theatrical sadness and regret. "How will you feel at my funeral? Is that really how you want things to end between us?" "I'm sure you'll be okay." Still, despite the creeping exhaustion, she burst out laughing. Okay, you win. 45 minutes. The call dropped. Lisa never
Sample complete. Ready to continue?